Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition. I'm Tasha Fusil, and it's Happily Ever After, the show that takes a closer look at some of the fairy tales that we fell in love with once upon a time. Fairy tales are, for the most part, really simple and straightforward. But like most things, the deeper you look into it, the more you'll see possibilities for interpretation. So tonight, I'm going to try and do just that with my guest, Murray Stein.
My name is Murray Stein. I'm a Jungian psychoanalyst. I live in Switzerland. I've been active in this field for 40 years or more.
Now, he is a psychoanalyst from the International School of Analytical Psychology in Zurich, and he's very kindly agreed to help explain some of the unspoken symbols that you're likely to find in a fairy tale. And we'll be doing that with one particular story this evening. You may not have heard of it. It's from a book called Household Tales by the Brothers Grimm, and the story is called The White Snake. We're going to be telling the story in three parts, so here we go.
A long time ago, there lived a king who was famed for his wisdom through all the land. Nothing was hidden from him, and it seemed as if news of the most secret things was brought to him through the air. But he had a strange custom. Every day after dinner, a trusty servant would bring him one more dish, but it was always covered, and even the servant didn't know what was in it. Now, this went on for a while, until one day the servant was so overcome with curiosity that he sneaked the covered dish into his room. He lifted up the cover and saw a white snake lying on the dish. He couldn't deny himself the pleasure of tasting it, so he sliced a little bit of it and put it into his mouth. As soon as it touched his tongue, he heard a strange whispering of little voices outside the window. He looked out, and it was then that he noticed that it was sparrows who were chatting, telling one another about what they had seen in the fields and the woods. Eating the snake had given him the power of understanding the language of animals. Now, it so happened on this day that the queen lost her most beautiful ring. The servant quickly became the suspect, since he was the only one trusted enough to go everywhere. The king gave him until the next day to prove his innocence, after which he would be executed. In his fear, the servant went into the courtyard and thought about how to help himself out of his trouble. Some ducks were sitting by the brook having a chat. They were telling one another where they had been all morning and what good food they had found.
"But something lies heavy on my stomach. I think I swallowed a ring which lay under the queen's window."
The servant at once seized her by the neck, carried her into the kitchen, and gave it to the cook to prepare for dinner. "Yes," said the cook, "she spared no trouble to fatten herself and has been waiting to be roasted long enough." So he cut off her head, and as she was being dressed for the spit, the queen's ring was found inside her. The servant was able to prove his innocence, and the king, to make amends for the wrong, allowed him to ask a favour and promised him the highest position in the court that he could wish for. But the servant refused everything and only asked for a horse and some money for travelling. He wanted to see the world.
That's the end of part one. And at this point in the story, there are a few things I'd like Murray to help explain, starting with why, in most fairy tales, there is this king and queen narrative.
Well, the king and queen are the parents. It reflects traditional culture, where there was always a dominant figure. Until recently, the democracy was not well known among human cultures. But what the king and queen represent are basically the dominant figures of authority. So it can be parent figures. The king and queen is a parent of culture. Everybody tries to emulate them or fight against them, and they get old and they have to change, they have to be renewed. So the way we interpret king and queen is that they are dominant attitudes that are good for some things and last for a while, but then also have to undergo a transformation or a change.
So, Murray, if the king and queen are the mum and dad figure, would the act of the servant stealing the white snake from the king represent how kids take from their parents, you know, as kids often do?
Well, I think kids will break the rules. They'll test the rules. And it's important that they do that. And, you know, the parents' tendency is to punish them, put them back into line for breaking the rules. But they need to break the rules in order to learn something. What the servant learns is the secret of the king's wisdom. So it's a very important lesson that he learns. Now, we have the same story in the Bible, in the book of Genesis. Adam and Eve are in the Garden of Eden. God is there, takes care of them, everything is fine. And then they break the rule. They eat the apple from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And suddenly they're aware. They become aware of the difference between nakedness and being covered. And this new awareness is very important for them. But then they're thrown out of the garden. But then they get to develop. If they'd stayed in the garden all their lives, they wouldn't have developed. Sometimes the punishment is a good thing. In the white snake story, he doesn't really get punished. He's threatened with punishment, but he solves the problem because he gets the knowledge of understanding the language of the animals like the king had. And he can make a deal with the king and queen. So he leaves under better circumstances than Adam and Eve leave the Garden of Eden. He leaves with a little money and a horse to make his way in the world. And it's a better way of separating from the parents than the biblical way. You make a deal with the parents, okay, give me a little money, I'll go to college, and then you'll be rid of me, and I'll be rid of you, and we can maybe write to each other once in a while or have a nice, more distant relationship, but I won't be dependent on you anymore, and I'm going to have my own experience of life. So you can learn a lot from this servant and the way he deals with animals and his challenges. But breaking the rule is something that everybody has to do in order to grow up. You have to experience some guilt, some pain, some maybe threat of punishment, and then you become conscious. That's a lesson that parents should understand when their children break the rules. It isn't that you shouldn't hold the children to the rules. That's fine to hold them to the rules, but also realize that when they break the rules, they're learning for themselves. They're going to experiment with things in life that you have no control over and you don't see most of the time. And they will have to learn their own lessons.
Animals play a really big part in this story, and more of them will be popping in and out as we go along. But of course, the main guy has to be the white snake.
And it's a white snake, which means it has a spiritual value. Colors make a difference, too, when you interpret symbolism. And white typically has to do with the other world, with spiritual entities and so on. So the white snake offers wisdom. And wisdom is a type of psychological knowledge that it's very hard to account for. You know, some people seem to have it and some don't. They just have good judgment and they're good with people and understanding situations. And there's a kind of intuitive knowledge that comes to them. Irrationally, they can't account for it exactly, but they have it. And you can see in the story that the king is a very good king because he can understand what's going on in the kingdom.
The servant in the story, he's a pretty crafty guy. I mean, he's acquired this power, which is great. But I suppose, you know, poor duck, he became collateral damage.
The duck was sacrificed, that's right. And there is collateral damage in fairy tales. Now, what does that mean? There is no gain without pain. Something has to be sacrificed in order to gain some knowledge. And I think we all experience that in certain respects. Life is demanding, and sometimes we have to make choices that we don't like to make, but it's necessary to make them, either for our survival or for our development, our future. As collateral damage goes, it's not too bad. The duck would have been sacrificed anyway somewhere down the line. It just happened a little sooner.
And the interesting thing, I think, about this particular part of the story is you don't hear the servant's sort of inner thoughts. You don't hear, you know, whether he's conscious about what he's done, whether he feels any guilt about giving the duck up, which, you know, in real life, probably these are the things that we grapple with, right? These are the kinds of worries that we will have.
In fairy tales, you don't get the inner life of the characters because they're not real-life characters. That's another difference from novels. These modern novels, you get the inner life of the various protagonists and what they're thinking, what they're feeling. But in fairy tales, you don't get that. They're more abstract. They're more like stick figures. They do things and they interact with other people and animals. Sometimes you get a sense that they're, like with this servant, he falls in love later with a princess, You don't get much detail about his feelings, but you know that he's really determined to win her, and he's willing to risk anything to do that. But you don't really get a glimpse into his inner life, because that isn't the way fairy tales operate. They're abstract figures. There's a hero figure. We have an inner hero in all of us. That is a motivation or an urge toward becoming heroes. We all have animals in us. Those are our instincts, if we can speak to the animals. So we interpret the figures in fairy tales as parts of the psyche, not as real-life characters with an inner life of their own.
We'll continue the story when we return after these messages. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Welcome back to the Evening Edition. I'm Tasha Fusil, and you're listening to Happily Ever After, where today we're reading a story called White Snake, about a servant who eats a white snake that gives him the ability to understand animals. So to recap, the servant has just left the kingdom that he'd been serving in. He was accused of stealing from the queen, even though he didn't. And to make amends for that accusation, the king gave him some money and a horse to go off and see the world. We're going to pick the story back up and just remember that the servant has this power to communicate with animals, which he'll be doing quite a bit of in this next part of the story.
After setting out on his travels, the servant one day came to a pond where he saw 3 fish caught in the reeds and gasping for water. But the servant had a kind heart. After hearing them struggle, he got off his horse and put the 3 prisoners back into the water. They quivered with delight and put out their heads and cried to him.
We will remember you and repay you for saving us.
The servant rode on, but after a while he started to hear a voice in the sand at his feet. So he listened more closely and heard an ant king complain.
Why cannot folks with their clumsy beasts keep off our bodies? That stupid horse with his heavy hoofs had been treading down my people without mercy.
So the servant turned his horse onto a side path, and like the fish before him, the ant king cried out his gratitude.
We will remember you. One good turn deserves another.
The new path the servant took led him into the woods, where he saw 2 old ravens standing by their nest, throwing out their young babies.
Out with you, you idle good-for-nothing creatures!
But the poor young ravens were on the ground, helplessly flapping their wings and crying.
What helpless chicks we are! We must fend for ourselves, and yet we cannot fly. What can we do but lie here and starve?
So the good servant alighted and killed his horse and gave it to them for food. And again, like the fish and ants before them, the ravens cried.
We will remember you. One good turn deserves another.
And now, without a horse, the servant had to make his way on foot. And after walking a long way, he came to a large city. On a crowded street, a man rode up on his horse and said,
The king's daughter wants a husband, but whoever sues for a hand must perform a hard task. And if he does not succeed, he will forfeit his life.
Many others had already made the attempt, but in vain. Nevertheless, when the young servant saw the king's daughter, he was so overcome by her great beauty that he forgot all the danger, went before the king and declared himself a suitor.
So our servant has left the comforts of his home, and Murray Stein, a psychoanalyst who is helping us to decode some of the possible symbolism in the story, says that it's to do with this longing that we might have to sort of reboot our life, to take a risk and to go off on an adventure.
You see that as the story unfolds, the servant is very well placed. He's at the right hand of the king. He has a very good position, a good job, so to speak, and he's comfortable. Then there's a crisis, and then he's offered an even better job, but he turns it down for the sake of going off on his own. It's a little bit like somebody in a profession, like, you know, maybe they studied to become a business person, they went into banking and they did very well at the age of 40. They're successful and they've made enough money and they have a nice family, and they ask themselves, is this all there is? And they feel a bit burned out. And then they're given a nice bonus and they take it and they say, well, I think I'll just go off and do a startup for myself. I'm going to do something on my own. I'm going to take a big risk, and I want to be creative, and I want to do something that is more reflective of my own personality and my own desire. And so that's what I see in this story. When the servant leaves the king, just asks for some money and a horse, and goes off into the world on his own, I see a person, you know, around the age of 35 or 40, striking out in a whole new direction that they hadn't really prepared for, but they've made an important decision to become themselves in a new way.
And in the story, his risks lead him to do good deeds as well. He uses his ability to hear animals to save them, which makes him a hero. Now, humans speaking to animals seem to be pretty common in fairy tales and folklore. So I asked Murray what the significance was of that.
Not only that they can speak, but that he can understand what they're saying. That's the animals are out there speaking all the time, but we often don't understand them. And the gift that he gets from eating a piece of the snake is that he can understand their language. And that's a very special feature of this story. You know, to understand the language of the animals means that you can understand the language of your body, what your body is telling you. You can understand the language of nature. You go out into the woods and you have an intuitive sense of what's going on and what's around you. And you can listen to what we call your unconscious, your irrational side, your feeling life. You know, you become tuned in to a dimension of life that makes all the difference. You know, you start understanding things you couldn't understand before. All this part of life that most people, if they don't eat the snake and get the wisdom or the ability to understand, just passes them by. They can hear the sounds, but they can't understand what it means. And I think if you get the notion that animals can speak to you, which is not an unusual idea among natural people, you know, people who live out in the woods and the jungles and the rural areas, farmers and hunters and people like that. Once you get the sense that animals can communicate with you, you start observing things that you didn't see before. There are people here in Switzerland who claim that in the fall that they can predict what the winter is going to be like by what the ants are doing. They actually study the ants or other kinds of animals to see how they're preparing for the winter. And animals don't talk in our human language, but they do communicate by, and if you know how to read their communications, you get some interesting information.
If we were to look at these animals as abstract things that can tell us more about ourselves, what could understanding and saving these animals mean?
The fish are contents of the unconscious, like dreams that come to you. And taking good care of parts of your unconscious, you know, being out of the water means they can't breathe. The lungs aren't working. Instincts aren't in their proper element. And so putting them back in the water is a regard for your natural life and how your energy is naturally moving, your creativity. And the ants, understanding what the ants are saying has to do with knowledge of very fine-tuned instinctual processes in the body. You know, when we say somebody is antsy, it's like they're irritable. It's like they're on edge. There's a kind of edginess about them that they can't account for, nervousness. And if you can read what that's about, if you can understand and take care of it, it will come to your aid later. That means understanding your body in a very nuanced and refined way.
So if I'm getting this right, the fish represents the flow of our unconscious, which is our energy and our creativity. Maybe some people might see it as the soul. And to understand the ants is to understand our body. So we've got the soul, we've got the body, which brings us to the ravens.
And the birds are your spirituality. And he makes a tremendous sacrifice when he gives his horse to the baby ravens. And that sacrifice for the sake of the spirit and the spiritual comes back and pays him in great dividends when they bring him the golden apples, the apples of life, from a place that no human being can reach. The birds can go where humans can't go. So they go a long distance. In the end, these animals repay him for his kindness, for his sensitivity to them. So he's somebody who takes good care of all of his functions, his body, his soul, his mind.
Which eventually leads him to good things in the next part of the story. And, you know, this theory that Murray is putting out that the fish and the ants and the ravens represent the mind, body and spirit can sound a little bit far out. But once I got on board with it, it made the sacrifice of the servant's horse a lot more understandable.
That's a very meaningful sacrifice. In fact, in certain religions in India, for instance, there were horse sacrifices. And the horse represents your, you know, like we say, horsepower, your energy to move and get around in the world. So sacrificing the horse is like giving up a huge benefit that you have just from being healthy and extroverted and doing things in the world. It's like taking all that energy and giving it to the spiritual. You see monks who do this. You know, this is a sacrifice of a monk. Gives up his normal animal energy, animal life, and goes into a retreat for 2 or 3 years. And then, in the end, that repays him.
So like the monks, this servant made all these sacrifices, not knowing where it might lead him. But it's a fairy tale, so it's most likely to end at a pretty good place. And we'll get there in just a bit. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
You're back on the Evening Edition. I'm Tasha Fusil, and here on Happily Ever After, we've been telling the story of the white snake, which is about a man who eats a white snake that gives him the magical ability to understand animals. We've been telling the story in parts and then doing a bit of interpretation afterwards with Murray Stein, a professor from the International School of Analytical Psychology in Zurich. We'll be bringing Murray back after we finish the final part of the story, but before that, let's do a bit of a recap. The servant, who is the protagonist in this story, uses his powers to help some fish and ants and ravens who were in need of help. After doing these good deeds, he went off on his way and arrived in a busy city where the king was holding a high-stakes game of Who Wants to Marry My Daughter, where if you win, you get to marry her, but if you lose, you die. The servant takes one look at the princess, falls in love, and agrees to get in the game. So here we pick up where we left off, which is at the first task.
The servant was led out to the sea, where a gold ring was thrown in. His first task was to fetch it from the water.
If you come up again without it, you will be thrown in again and again until you perish amid the waves.
The servant stood on the shore and thought about what to do, when suddenly, the very three fish he had saved came swimming towards him. One fish held a mussel in his mouth, which it laid at the servant's feet. In it lay the golden ring. Full of joy, he took it to the king, expecting that he would be granted his reward. But when the proud princess discovered that he was just an ordinary man and not equal to her in birth, she asked that he perform another task. So she went to the garden and threw 10 sacks full of seeds on the grass.
Tomorrow before sunrise, these must be picked up, and not a single grain be wanting.
There was no way to complete this impossible task, so the servant sat in sorrow, awaiting his punishment. But the next morning, he saw all 10 sacks standing side by side without a single grain missing. The ant king had come in the night before with thousands of ants to pick up all the seeds. The princess was amazed, but she could not yet conquer her proud heart.
Although he has performed both tasks, he shall not be my husband until he has brought me an apple from the Tree of Life.
The servant didn't know where the Tree of Life stood, but he looked and looked and looked. After wandering through 3 kingdoms, his legs gave way, and he took rest under a tree. As he did, he heard a rustling in the branches, and a golden apple fell into his hand. The 3 baby ravens flew down to him.
We are the 3 young ravens whom you saved from starving. We heard that you were seeking the golden apple, so we flew over the seas to the end of the world where the Tree of Life stands to bring you the apple.
The jubilant servant took the golden apple to the king's beautiful daughter, who had no more excuses left to make. They then cut the apple of life in 2 and ate it together. Her heart became full of love for him, and they lived in undisturbed happiness to a great age. The end.
So we've come to the end of the story, and it's a happy ending for the servant who made these sacrifices that ultimately won him the heart of the princess. On the surface, it seems like he did everything in the name of love, but some might argue that that wasn't the case, that it was beauty that he was fighting for. But Murray says that there is a reason for this.
Beauty is worshipped. Beauty is an attribute of the divine. There's a Greek fairy tale, a very old one, called Amor and Psyche. And Psyche is a princess. She's a young woman, one of three daughters of the king. And she's the most beautiful woman in the world. And people identify her as a goddess, and they come and they worship her. And it's very uncomfortable for her because her sisters are very jealous and envious and so on. But extreme beauty is a divine attribute. It's extremely powerful. When a beautiful person enters the room, everybody looks at them. It's just a natural human reaction. Also, when people create images of the divine, they're usually very beautiful. And so winning the beautiful princess is more than just finding a nice girl next door, getting married and having a family. In the terms of the fairy tale, it's the apotheosis. It's the end goal of the whole development, that he wins her heart. And that means that he really fulfills his life. It's a symbol for the fulfillment of life, the marriage. As we know, in reality, when people get married, just the beginning of a story, and sometimes a very sad story and difficult one. But symbolically, it's the end of a story of a life well-lived and successfully lived. There are even themes of, you know, death as the great moment of marriage, that at the end of your life that you will experience something like a marriage with the divine as you leave this life and go into another one. So this story doesn't have to do with boy meets girl and, you know, wins her. It means living a very accomplished and successful life in the end, so that at the end of it, he feels fulfilled. He feels like he has won something that gives his whole life meaning, and it's a climax. It's a moment of total fulfillment. If he'd stayed in the kingdom, he could have become very powerful, sitting beside the king, being his prime minister, but he would have never won to this level of success in a spiritual, psychological sense.
So what happens when you bring in modern thoughts, like the rejection of an old institution like marriage, or the rejection of the idea that beauty is something to covet? Would that change the meaning or interpretation of the story?
Well, I think there are different levels, you know. I mean, there's a cultural level. I mean, we're going through a period of time now where certain things that were highly valued in the past are being downplayed or dismantled or deconstructed. We're in a period of reorganization of world culture. It's a period, we can call it liminality, where old structures are falling apart, old understandings and narratives, and something new will be born. We don't know what that is yet, but we're in the middle of a process. So in fashion and design and art and film and so on, you can see how this is all turning around. But there are certain elements of the human that are permanent. They will not change. They'll take on another form, another aspect, another rendition or interpretation, but they are what we call archetypal. They show themselves in a certain way in a culture, and then they fade, and then they come back, maybe in another expression later. And so, for instance, beauty and love and marriage and so on as themes are just part of the human condition. They will be there no matter what. They might take a different direction, different form or narrative, but underlying that will be the same themes, the same motifs.
The ultimate message of the story, according to Murray, is that you don't just do good things expecting a happily ever after. In fact, you have no idea what the outcome will be.
You do the act of kindness out of compassion, because this hero is sensitive and he understands. He can hear the ants, the ant king. He can hear the fish. He can understand the poor little birds who've been thrown out of their nest. And he acts out of pure kindness and compassion. That is not done for a later payoff. It pays off later, but you can't count on that. If you count on it, it won't happen, most likely. No, you have to act out of the goodness of your heart and genuinely. Then your life will take directions that you would have never expected. You would be surprised at what comes of it. But if you have to do it with integrity and not with ulterior motives.
If we read into the story in that way, the servant getting a happily ever after is something we should celebrate.
rather than question.
Yes, I think we should absolutely celebrate it. Yeah, and we should celebrate it whenever we see it in life. When you see people who have reached their goal and are happy with their goal, I think it's to celebrate. It isn't always without a lot of suffering in the background and a lot of crisis. But I think we should celebrate lives well lived, definitely.
So the story that we told today is called The White Snake, and my guest this evening was Murray Stein, a professor at the International School of Analytical Psychology. This has been Happily Ever After on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.